coming back to you after a week off. I don't know if you've noticed, but I have started to do an every other week podcast. Ooh, things have just gotten away from me a little bit. And you know what? That happens. If your life is anything like mine, things definitely get out of control from time to time. So I've been running a couple of oldies but goodies for you on the weeks in between. And it's possible I'm going to have to do this for a couple more months through the summer as I am paying attention to things that are going on in the business and in family. I have quite a few podcasts that I have already got in the can, as they say, recorded, and will run for you some fresh podcasts. And I have a number of podcasts scheduled to be recorded, some great guests coming up. But I am absolutely struggling with all of the things that I do. And I don't know if you have this issue, but right now I'm juggling with the things that I love to do, the things that sing to me and bring me joy, the things that I have to do, the things that I sort of have an in-between feeling about. You know, I want to do them. They give me a lot of satisfaction, but they are still things that are just, they're necessary. You know, they pull on me, they're obligations, and I do need to do them. They are requirements in my life. But, you know, you ask yourself that question, if you had all the money in the world, would you do XYZ, or would you do something different? Would you do something else? And, you know, that's a funny question. So I think I would do things differently. I would still be serving my community, but I would be doing it in a different way. So, you know, when you get to be of a certain age, one of my friends used to love to say a certain vintage, you look for other ways to serve your community and you slow down a little bit, or you need to. And that's where I'm at. I hope your Mother's Day weekend was fantastic. You know, I didn't have a great one. Mother's Day is still a little bit of a double-edged sword for me. Love my Caroline. Feel always just so sad. It's been just, you know, 10. This is number 10 Mother's Days without Elizabeth. And, you know, I can't help it. I wallow in it. I just miss her. And it doesn't feel like any time has passed, you know, it just feels like a struggle. I feel like, kind of wading through pudding or quicksand still. And, you know, everything just is so slow going. I start getting kind of cross and angry with everybody around me and real crotchety and don't sleep well, and that makes things harder. And then I don't eat well, and I crave bad foods, and then I don't do the things that I'm supposed to do to take care of myself, like exercise and move around and get fresh air and do the things that I need to do to take care of myself, and it just perpetuates. So I sort of start to circle the drain, and I know better, but I don't do better. I don't know why. It just happens. And I just throw this massive pity party for myself. And, you know, the family, they're sick of it. They don't want to participate in it. They don't feel sorry for me. I don't ask them to. But here we are. And that's the way that it goes. But this week on the podcast, fortunately, I got to pivot and present you with a guest who is someone who is the exact opposite of throwing a pity party, someone who has just exemplified that, you know, pick up and go spirit. And since I've met her, she has been a tremendous asset and resource for me in my practice and in the community. I'm so excited. I got connected to her through another resource who I have been grateful for on a daily basis. Eric, you know who you are. Thank you so much for all the people that you've been connecting me to. My podcast guest this week is Anna Maki. She is someone who works at the Bobby Dodd Institute. And let me just tell you a little bit about Anna. So her title is Director of Benefits Navigation, and they're out of Atlanta, Georgia, but they serve people all over the country. And the Bobby Dodd Institute is a nonprofit that was founded to serve people in the disability community. They do a lot of things, but Anna focuses on benefits navigation. And a lot of that is helping people get Social Security, other SSI or SSDI benefits. She has developed a unique adaptive function assessment, and it's specifically mapped to the SSA Blue Book criteria for diminished mental or physical residual functional capacity. That may sound like a mouthful, but let me tell you how helpful that is. Social Security is a mountain to climb when it comes to trying to get benefits for people. And trying to hire a lawyer like me after you've been denied benefits just means that you have years to wait to get benefits. And most people can't wait that long. So she has served more than 1,200 plus families and has earned more than $300 million. Yes, you heard me, $300 million in benefits over the course of these individuals' lifetimes. And in addition to this benefits acquisition, Bobby Dodd is one of the 78 providers of work incentive planning and assistance throughout the Social Security Administration. Work incentive planning is so important. It helps people, give them a safety net to try work safely without losing their benefits. Not every work attempt is successful. And sometimes it takes people a while and multiple attempts to be able to get back to work and be on firm footing before they can come off benefits, especially losing their health insurance. Not everybody has to come off public health insurance, but their health insurance, if it is public health insurance, will sometimes change in nature. It's really important that people understand the very complicated Social Security system when it comes to work and benefits. And they have outlined a lot of incentive programs for work and trialing work, but it is so complicated that it is very hard for people to understand and not get into trouble when they try work. So I'm so excited and proud to know Anna Maki and for you all to meet her. And I encourage you to connect with her. Many people around the country might qualify for their services at the Bobby Dodd Institute. We'll have all of her contact information in the show notes, but you can reach out to them at bobbydodd.org. That's BOBBYDODD.org. And they will lead you through in their website to connect with them and figure out whether you're eligible for their services, even if you are not in Georgia. And I highly recommend it. I've already sent them a couple of clients to assist. And it's very exciting for me because their fees, when they do charge fees, are very low, quite low, actually, very reasonable. And for me, that's very exciting because While I like to try to assist people pro bono or sliding scale if I can, we are so small that we cannot help everybody that comes to us. So their organization being much larger than ours, I hope that I can send people her way for the, you know, foreseeable future. So Anna, thank you. I have so much gratitude for you and your colleagues and what you are doing. And I see no better time than after Mother's Day to put your interview out there. Thank you so much. And here we go.
And I'm here today with Anna Mahi. Oh, Anna, did I say your name right? You know what? Mm-hmm. I probably did not. Is that okay?
Anna Mackey's fine.
Anna Mackey, thank you. I'm sorry. I usually ask that before I hit the record button, and I got so fascinated talking to you that I absolutely asked like not the right question before I hit the record button this morning. So, you know, Anna has the most fascinating job ever. I always say I'm the luckiest gal in the world. I get to talk to the most fascinating people and find out the most amazing things about what people are doing out in the community. So Anna's job is all about helping people with disabilities get employed and maintain employment while also, you know, trying to secure public benefits and maintain public benefits if they need them. Sure, I'm not even scratching the surface of all the things that you do. So Anna, please, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about not only yourself, but how in the world did you get interested in this field?
Sure. Thank you. And thanks for having me. So I'm the Director of Benefits Navigation for the Bobby Dot Institute. The Bobby Dot Institute is a nonprofit organization based in Atlanta, Georgia. The benefits program is something that I started back in 2016 as a means to help families identify all the resources that are available to them, particularly when their individuals are transitioning from into young adulthood and aging out of school. And so it morphed into doing a lot of work with Social Security, doing a lot of work with home and community-based waivers, but also doing a lot of coordination with government agencies like vocational rehabilitation agencies and groups like that. I got into this because I'm a mom. I have a 29-year-old son on the spectrum, and he's your textbook. This is what a guy with autism and a moderate intellectual disability acts like, you know, so has difficulty, you know, self-regulating, has the attention span of a flea, you know, so how do we find employment for him? How do we find the programs and services for him so that he has a good life? Like, he should have a great life. Everybody deserves a good life. Right. And in Georgia, it's a little fractured. You know, we have 159 counties in Georgia, and we have 159 different ways of doing things.
Sure.
It really gets muddy fast for families. We're also not very good at providing resources for individuals with disabilities. So this is a state where families need to be encouraged and trained to advocate for their loved ones, because yes, it's not just going to happen. So my son was one of the lucky guys. You know, I had to figure it out the hard way. You know, how do we get Social Security? How do we get home and community-based waiver? And he had a seamless transition going from the school system into a program and availing himself of different services. But that doesn't happen for most, and it should. So this is part of my commitment to the community, to, you know, mom to mom. We've got to work together to figure out how can we create the best lives for our loved ones.
So do people say to you, but, you know, Anna, you're an attorney, you know, you have a JD, you have a master's degree, of course you can do it, but I can't do this.
Right. And I think that's where they get, the whole process is so overwhelming for folks. And so it's hard to envision yourself, you know, putting on that gladiator uniform to fight the big fight. I think I approach every case on a person-centered basis. Every case is unique. Every individual is unique. Every mom and dad are unique. You know, we got to figure this out together, you know? So I think it's more of a matter of less about my credentials and more to do with everything that we've learned over the years. We've served more than 1,500 families. I feel like I have gone through literally millions of medical records, you know,
trying to build
all of these cases. We have secured more than $300 million in benefits over the course of lifetimes for our individuals. We have a remarkably high rate of success with particularly with Social Security applications. But again, in Georgia, because there's 7,000 people on the planning list waiting for services for a waiver in Georgia. So I have to train families on the language that they use. I talk a lot about, most of my job is translating English to English.
Yeah.
Whether it's the Social Security lingo or the home and community-based waiver lingo. But the biggest challenge is moving from a strengths-based narrative to a needs-based narrative. And our IEPs focus on strengths. And, you know, I look at that with my guy. You know, I have a million IEPs that say, Eric is a delightful child. And he is most of the time. But, you know, that doesn't address what his needs are. And so being able to be candid about what support needs that individual has. And sometimes our families don't know what their support needs are because they're raising their child in the best way that they can. And that's their normal. Right. So they're not looking necessarily at the level of support that they've become used to. They don't see that if they were to take a big step away and go, what would a care provider do? How many hours of community living support would we need to do this same function? So there's a process that we have followed. We've developed this whole thingamajob. It's like, it begins with I call it benefits mapping. So we sit down and it's a detailed clinical interview with the family to kind of figure out where we are and then where do we want to go and then develop an action plan to go from point A to point B. And so what that might look like is things like, okay, you're turning 18. So we need to look at Social Security. We need to make sure you're on that planning list for now comp. Home and community-based waiver. You need to avail yourself of family support services. In the meantime, if you're interested in work, we need to look at vocational rehab supports. We also need to have that conversation about guardianship. And you know, are we talking about guardianship or power of attorney or facilitated decision-making? We need to talk about supplemental needs trusts and ABLE accounts. So there's a lot of estate planning and life planning that's embedded in our benefits review process. The big outcomes of that, especially if one of our to-do items is applying for Social Security, is we've developed a series of assessments that are clinical based that do a deep dive on adaptive function as it relates to an individual's support need requirements. So at the end of this 2-hour clinical interview, we're going to have a 13-page report that's summarizing all the diagnoses and all the adaptive function requirements. And we're going to have gone through a deep dive on that person's ability to perform activities of daily living. We're going to assess their behavioral risks, and we're going to assess some of their general health risks. And at the end of it, that's going to help us frame specific recommendations for support needs. And so, again, if you're coming from a stance like in Georgia, where you got 7,000 people on a planning list and you're kind of competing for resources, it's important for you to be able to advocate with specificity. Not that I just need a waiver, but I need 30 hours of community access group and 20 hours of community living support and 20 units of respite. So being able to hone in and document the whys and the hows of those support needs is instrumental in ensuring that we're getting the level of services that are right for that individual.
Right.
I had originally done that. This is a marvelous assessment. I've been using it for years now, and I tweak it every year. There's always things I need to add to it. And I did it expressly for the purpose of advocating for waivers. But turns out this is fantastic documentation for Social Security. So a lot of times when individuals are applying for Social Security, they're not aware of what the criteria for eligibility is for Social Security. And it's very different. Today is March 21st. It's World Down Syndrome Awareness Day. And if I have an individual with Down syndrome applying for Social Security, I just need that genetic report that says trisomy 21. I don't have to show diminished mental residual functional capacity. But if I have an individual with autism, I got to show not only the diagnosis of autism, but I have to outline the severity and impact of autism as it relates to diminished mental residual functional capacity. That's harder to do. And that's why a lot of these cases get denied, because they don't have the documentation that correlates to severity and impact.
So what kind of clinicians are you using to do this assessment?
Me. So I have a dual degree. So I have my law degree that helps with all the administrative stuff, but I'm also a clinician as well. And then BDI has also launched a behavioral health program. So I have in-house staff as well to support, which is amazing. So we're a very fortunate organization to have diverse programs and support needs.
That's amazing. Do you have a huge backlog and a long wait for services?
Not really. The behavioral health program we've just launched just in the past 6 months, actually. Right now I have 224 clients right now.
Wow.
And so that sounds like a lot, but I have a team, you know? And so honestly, once you get into the case, because we have developed our processes, it's a machine. So it's like, we have our intake process. We're doing that initial benefits mapping. As soon as we have that benefits mapping, we know what we need to do. And so then it's a matter of just getting on the calendar to do these assessments and then go through that process of assisting them with the filing, so that the average case is only 3 hours.
And you were telling me that you can do this for anybody in any state.
Right. The Medicaid is different from state to state, but that medical determination of eligibility for Social Security, that's universal. So anybody who is struggling with getting a medical determination of disability for purposes of Social Security, we would be able to help them with that. That initial level of need assessment I do with the initial applications, I get a lot of cases from appeal. So they don't come to us in the beginning. They've come to us, but they've been denied. And we have that 60-day window to file an appeal. So I have a separate assessment that is specifically mapped to either mental or physical residual functional capacity limitations. So, you know, when you think about the reconsideration level, all they're really doing at reconsideration is they're picking up that file from desk number one and they're moving it over to desk number two. So unless you're adding new medical documentation, the likelihood of you winning at the reconsideration level is pretty low. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that is why I was asking you about your backlog and wait time, because when you have short periods of time to be able to get, you know, an assessment and a report done, around here, getting a clinician, it's usually a 6 month wait. And then to get the report after the clinical evaluation is done is another few months.
Right.
You know, sometimes you're waiting 6, 9 months, a year to get an evaluation and then a report.
And so, I think that's similar to what we see in Atlanta with psychologists doing a traditional psychological evaluation using assessments like a Vineland adaptive behavior scale or an ABAS or things like this. This is different. This is not to replace a psychological evaluation. Mm-hmm. These are simply clinical interviews that it's like, think of a biopsychosocial on steroids is really what this is. So it's going into great detail, but the narrative that's in that is going to help. I just always think about the adjudicator who's trying to make that decision of medical determination when they're not trained clinicians, and how can we make that process easier for them? So the report is actually formatted with all their boxes checked so that they can see not only what those limitations are, but where that's coming from.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's a pretty unique model. And that's why, you know, we want to expand this as much as we can. BDI is very well known in the Atlanta area. I got this wonderful foundation to give me some scholarship money that enabled me to go statewide. So now we're serving 68 counties in Georgia, which is fantastic. And, you know, unfortunately, I can't always rely on scholarships and whatnot. But because we're a nonprofit, we're very diligent about keeping our fees low. So for $375, you're going to get this assessment plus the counseling and consultation with what to do with that assessment. So it can be a real game changer for individuals who are kind of in that, I call it purgatory, where they're high functioning enough where they're going to get dismissed. Right. But their needs are real. And what we see particularly in our Georgia disability adjudication processes is they're looking at the full scale IQ. They're not necessarily looking at adaptive function and not looking at the totality of the person. They're just making some assumptions based on somebody's full scale IQ. And we both know that that's just one component. You know, cognitive function is important, but it doesn't tell the whole story. So what we're trying to do is provide that narrative assessment that paints a vivid picture of this individual's needs and their limitations in performing activities of daily living, and mapping that to some of the criteria that shows some weaknesses and concentration and persistence, or some limitations in adaptability, and, you know, talking about how this person is going to decompensate and if you change their routine, or how they're going to decompensate if they get overwhelmed with too many directives all at the same time. So right. We try to help them work through that.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that happens a lot is that you'll find people who've never applied for benefits, but then they lose a parent. Or a parent becomes unable to care for them. And you find that, you know, folks are now in their 40s or 50s. So they're just now, you know, coming into care or looking for benefits.
Right.
And it's very difficult to find clinicians who will attempt to evaluate them at this point. Are you able to start working with them at those ages? Because again, trying to find a clinician who will do a full-scale evaluation, and you don't always have, old reports or old evaluations.
Right, exactly. And, you know, it's so critical with those individuals that we're establishing the date of onset of that condition prior to age 22, so we can get them viewed as an adult dependent child, not just. So it's that medical determination disability is great for, but we want to hone in on that adult dependent child's benefit in particular. So yes, to what we've done is we have developed some very close relationships. Again, we have our own behavioral health program, but we partner closely with other current organizations. I have my go-to team that they understand what we're trying to do. And so I have one psychologist who her practice is primarily a pediatric practice, but she will accept anybody that I refer to her regardless of age, because she understands what we're trying to do. And so, you know, she writes that evaluation in a way to help us clearly identify that this condition is, you know, autism. You've had that since birth. You didn't get that in the community pool when you were 21, you know? So,
yes.
You know, we're able to establish that. So that's worked out really well. And we've had, You know, I think when I first started this program back in 2016, my original title was transition specialist. So we were really looking at individuals as they were aging out. And I felt like I was a little shepherd trying to get, you know, this sheep from over there and that sheep from over there, because the need is pervasive across the entire life cycle. Yeah. And, you know, I've had a number of individuals where during that initial assessment, I can put on my clinical hat and go, okay, I think we've got some other things going on here. So I'm going to refer you to my psychologist to run specific assessments so that we can get that right determination. Because very rarely are you going to see somebody who's in their 40s and older with a diagnosis of autism, even though it's right there in front of you that it's autism, mm-hmm. but they just, mm-hmm. they didn't screen for that. So I had my oldest individual that got the diagnosis was 58. Getting a diagnosis of autism. He had gotten a diagnosis of schizophrenia when he was 16. It wasn't schizophrenia, it was autism.
Yeah. And that is the hardest thing too, because those mental illness diagnoses, they stick, and then they're in the wrong box.
They're in the wrong box.
And wrong medications and wrong, decades of wrong treatment plans and wrong approach. And then, you know, you trying to get out from under wrong agencies, and it's so difficult.
He didn't need a sort of crisis team. He needed supports through the Department of Health. He needed like waiver type services, you know, it was remarkable for this individual because he's super, super smart. And how transformative for him to finally have the right diagnosis and to be able to understand and have it make sense. You know, imagine going through your whole life, not really understanding, like, why do I have this label? And now he's looking at this. Now I understand who I am. This explains me more, and it helps me explain myself to others more. So it's been very transformative and powerful for him, not only in terms of getting him the right services and the right supports in that regard, but also in helping him build and then maintain relationships because he understands himself better.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about work incentives and Social Security.
Right. So Bobby Dodd is a WIPA provider. So WIPA is the Work Incentive Planning and Assistance Program through Social Security. There are 78 WIPA providers nationwide. Three are in Georgia. So I think I know that BDI is the only organization that does both benefits acquisition and work incentive planning, at least on half of the United States. I have to confirm for the other half. Normally, the WIPA model is the agency does vocational supports. So they're helping doing like more workforce supports and WIPA. So we do all of it. We do benefits acquisition. We also have a workforce team where we do work supports, and we have WIPA. So what WIPA involves is you have to go through a lot of training to be a community work incentive counselor, a CWIC. And so what happens, and they changed the contract rules this last go around. So generally, an individual who is a Social Security beneficiary who is working, you've basically moved from the realm of Blue Book territory, because Blue Book is all about how you secure benefits, to Red Book territory, which is all the rules and regulations for working as a Social Security beneficiary. And so what I encourage folks to do is to use the Ticket to Work helpline to access a CWIC. That's your best way to get a CWIC, is through the helpline, because the helpline does all the pre-screening for eligibility for work incentive planning. And so once we get a referral from the Ticket to Work helpline, what we're basically doing is guiding that individual in getting what's called a benefits planning query, because the first order of business that a CWIC is going to do is to verify the benefits that you have. So that's the piece that takes the most time, is getting confirmation of benefits. So they go through the process of getting a BPQY with Social Security, and then they prepare what's called a benefits summary and analysis, a BSNA. And a BSNA report is is a lot of great information about these work incentives, but there's embedded in all these sections of how this applies to you, you know, based on your earnings goal. What does this look like? And what I found as we've gone through this process is there's still, this is a great opportunity to inform and educate and empower Social Security beneficiaries about all of these work incentives, because they're radically different based on what form of benefit. If you have SSI, we're talking about a monthly calculation. We really want to look at potential impairment related work expenses to help with those calculations. But if we're talking about SSDI, then we're talking about that linear process of beginning with a trial work period, moving into an extended period of eligibility, and then into that expedited reinstatement process. So they're radically different. And what I find is a lot of folks don't know what benefit they have.
Right. Oh, I know. They're so confused all the time about what their benefits are. But I think that's Social Security's fault. Their statements are not clear.
Translating to English. Right. I mean,
they don't send you a letter that says you are on Social Security disability payments. It says nowhere on the letter what type of payment you are getting.
Bless their hearts is all I can say. It's just bless their hearts. You know, when they get that award letter, it's in the upper left-hand corner. That's where you have to look. And it'll say supplemental security income, or I'll have the information for, you know, retirement survivors. But bless their hearts, they don't know how to communicate. And the funny, it's more funny, sad than funny, haha. But when I have an individual who's gone through the Social Security application process and they've gone through the technical screen and then they've gone through the medical determination. So instead of getting a letter that says, hey, we've completed your medical determination of disability, and you know, yeah, we agree that you know you meet our criteria, but now we need to go back because it's been 8 months. We need to go back and do that technical screen again. Do they say that? No. Instead, you get this kind of scary letter that says, we need to talk to you. And it feels like, you know, you're being summoned by Darth Vader into the principal's office. You know, it's like, oh my gosh. And so people go, and they're like, what does this mean? And I'm like, yay. It means that, you know, you've actually been medically approved, but they need to do that technical screen again. But gosh, why can't they just say that?
Right. There are so many dumb things that happen. You know, so for example, the first letter that they get when they're going through the process is they get denied for SSDI because they haven't worked enough quarters, but nobody tells them that.
Nobody tells them that. And that is actually built in to part of our process, because I remember what it felt like when I got that denial letter. And I'm like, you know what you think? You think you failed your kid. You think you immediately blame yourself. I have screwed up my kid's life. I was trying to get this and we've been denied.
Do I have to appeal? Like, no, because this is, you got to expect this. Yeah. This is going to happen the first time. They've got to go through all of their, you know, benefits in order to see, do you meet this test? No. Do you meet this test? No. And then they're going to go to their last resort benefit, which is the one that you're waiting for anyway, you know, and they can't skip over. They have to go in order.
No, that's exactly right. And so I tell people, you know, SSDI is an entitlement program. SSI is not. SSI is needs-based. So every file has to be screened because they have to. It's an entitlement program. They have to screen that first. And then they're going to go to SSI because that's a payer of last resort. It goes with Medicaid. And in Georgia, at least, Georgia has automatic enrollment in Medicaid. So if you have SSI, you're going to get Medicaid. Yes. Not every state does that. But yeah, it's confusing. So part of that mapping process is, again, the opportunity to inform and educate and empower, because we're like, this is what you need to expect. And, you know, same thing, getting them ready for the technical screen. What do you need to expect with that technical screen? And they'll do that rep payee interview. They never say, and now we're going to do the rep payee interview. They just launch right into it. And it confuses the parents. Like, why are you talking about my income? Because we're talking about his income, because now he's 18 and they're all confused. If they had just said, hey, now we're moving into the rep payee interview section, it would make so much more sense. But
and they start asking people about, you know, where you live, And am I going to do, you know, take a deduction for in-kind support and maintenance? And so they start asking people about, you know, what's the, you know, what do you pay for rent? What do you pay for heat?
Right.
Instead of just saying, oh, there's no way in heck that you're going to ever, you know, pay your fair share in, you know, young disabled person. Like, don't put the family through a 20-minute interview about all of their bills in their house and whatnot. I mean, explain to them why you're asking them all these questions. Don't take up all their time, like trying to hunt down their bills. They're busy.
Right. Well, and it's scary. It's invasive and it's scary. And so my goal is try to eliminate the fear factor for families. I want them to understand, because knowledge is power. And the more they understand, the more they're able to advocate, they're going to be more confident in all of these processes. And I typically try to get the award first, and then I'll worry about getting the increase later. I don't typically file with a rental agreement, you know, contingent upon reward. You can do it that way. They're a little hostile to that in Georgia. So I'm just like, let's just focus on the award. Let me get the award. Okay, now this is how we get the increase. And I have this whole process mapped out with a rental agreement and Social Security's form that basically affirms that if you were renting that room to a stranger, it would be the same rate. So you're not really subsidizing your child, because it's the same rate that you would charge anyone.
We can't do that in Massachusetts. It's way too expensive here to live. Right. Nobody here would ever be able to meet the fair market value.
Yeah.
Unless you had 12 kids, it wouldn't work out, you know?
Right. And that's an advantage. And I see that more now. I see more denials, but we're still about 50-50. Depending on the individual, and again, how many people are living in the home. Because, you know, Georgia is, depending on where you are, it's pretty inexpensive place to live.
Yeah, it could be out in the western part of our state, but it's, you know, it's pretty rare. And in different parts of the country, I know that that's different. You know, some people can actually, and that, you know, it's almost $300 now for that ISM. Because of the increase in the federal amount. So anyway, I don't want to get too off track, but I wanted to ask, you know, just in keeping with your pledge to really support individuals and families in getting the information out there and making sure that people are prepared, and making sure that you are the navigators, the advocates, and partnering with people. How do you help make this very convoluted world less scary? Like, what is it in a few sentences? You know, what is your approach to streamline for people? Can you, you know, bring that down to just bring that into focus for us a little bit more?
Sure. I think it begins obviously with a person-centered approach. You know, what's going on with this individual? You know, how old are they? What disabling condition are they presenting with? How does that condition impact them? And what services are ultimately are they looking for? So that's your initial conversation of kind of where are we? And then based on that, every organization and government agencies run pretty much the same way, where they're always going to look at, you know, assessment and intake and development of a service plan. So all the different agencies are going to have their eligibility criteria for certain services. And so what we're trying to do is help match up what this individual's needs are with eligibility criteria for services. Mm-hmm. And so by going through that systematic approach and helping that individual to be aware of what documentation they do have. One of the things that I see, like, a lot of folks have psychological evaluations, but very few parents actually know how to interpret that psychological evaluation.
Okay.
So part of that review process is, let's look at what you've got. Let's look at that IEP. Let's look at your psychological evaluation, and then let's make some some plans based on that. And so it's very common that I will see some potential, what we might call errors in the process, because let's say I have a 17-year-old who's just gotten a psychological evaluation, but guess what? They use children's scales. So their numbers may not be, you know, eligible for benefits, but it kind of calls into question the efficacy of that, of the use of that assessment, if you're looking at a 17-year-old being compared to a child versus a 17-year-old being compared to an adult. So I'm very purposeful about making families aware of what's in that psychological evaluation and what assessments they should be using, so that we're getting an apples to apples comparison. And that's going to be critical for helping to establish eligibility for some of these benefits.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So I'm really curious. A lot of people do this as advocates and supporters outside the system, but you've chosen to join forces inside the system. Mm-hmm. You know, why? Like, what was your thought?
What's the expression? Keep your enemies closer. The more I am aware of all of these government agencies and policies and procedures, the more it's like a dance, the more I can get in sync with them. And, you know, my goal is to capitalize on resources and making sure and holding these agencies accountable to correct interpretation of their own policy. And then also being able to position ourselves as partners with organizations. We do a lot of work with the Georgia Advocacy Office, with the Georgia Council on Developmental Disabilities. So we do a lot of support work in that environment to make changes when some of those policies don't make sense.
So you don't find it limits you in what you can do for people?
No.
Okay.
No, awesome. I think the numbers kind of speak for themselves. You know, if we're able to, through these relationships and these processes, make sure that we are in alignment, then we're able to maximize the services pretty readily.
Yeah. So 6 years you've been around, you
six
said?
Years. 6 years.
And how many families served and individuals served?
More than 1,500. And if I were really going to crunch the numbers, it's really closer to 350 million benefits. And that's an underestimate, because I serve a lot of families, in the way the time that it takes, particularly for home and community-based waivers. People don't always come back to me. Oh, Anna, we got it. You know, it's like I'm setting them up for how to get it and everything that they need to do, and provide them with that advocacy-based process. But then it takes time. So it's really a conservative number.
And I checked out your annual report. You are running lean, girl. You're doing it.
Right.
You're really doing it.
We are. Our WIPA program is number 2 in the nation.
Amazing.
Right.
I love it. I mean, you saw a need and you filled it. Created it, you know, so.
It's so funny that you say that, because, you know, my son, again, you know, Mr. Personification of Autism, you know, so we watch a lot of animated movies, and some we watch a lot. And there was one called Robots. And so I've seen that movie so many times that now I'm brainwashed. And the CEO character in the Robots movie, he walks around and he goes, "If you see a need, you fill a need." And I'm like, yeah. You know, that's profound. If you see a need, you fill a need. And that has become what we do, you know? And so the role that we play is not static. It's always changing, because the needs change. And it's like one of the biggest focuses that we have in Georgia is a lack of affordable housing. And a lack of, so we have a lot of wait lists for waiver programs, but then even if you get the waiver, you're like, yay, I finally got a waiver.
Yes.
Try to find a provider.
Yeah, everywhere.
Right. So there's all these different tasks and challenges. And so what can we do to fill that need? So, you know, is there an opportunity for us to do training programs so that we can ensure that the direct support professionals out there have an understanding of clinical issues? We can do that. You know, what are the things that we can do to help mitigate some of the risks that this population faces every day? BDI has launched a capital campaign. You'll see more on the website with that. The plans include housing, right? Because that's a need. So, you know, we have, you know, work opportunities for individuals with disabilities. So we're kind of walking the talk as it relates to trying to provide those appropriate services, but empower individuals to live the best lives that they possible as it relates to financial stability, maintaining and maximizing their level of independence and interdependence so they can live, work, and play in the community, just like everybody else. That's what it should be.
What we all want,
you know? And, you know, I love the fact that my guy works one day a week at BDI. And I love that I'm a BDI employee. He's a BDI employee. How cool is that? You know, so, you know, he'll be in the workhouse and he's doing kitting and, you know, contract fulfillment, and he's doing great. But what that's meant for him is having that sense of purpose and having that sense of acceptance. And, you know, he's proud to be I'm a working man. I'm like, yeah. You know, so yeah, we're living the dream that way. You know, we have good care providers. There's a variety of programs. We live in Gwinnett County and there's a fair number of resources here. You get outside to more rural Georgia, like if I go, you know, an hour and a half ride away, you know, there's very little resources. You're really talking about care deserts. So there's still so much that we need to do as a state in Georgia to provide the appropriate resources.
I hear that from people all over the country, and but there's so many great people like you working on it. And I think it's, you know, it's perpetual. We're going to be working on these issues today, tomorrow, and probably forever.
Right.
We will make progress. And there'll be new problems that will creep up, but that's okay.
Right.
That's our life. That's what we do. And we'll just keep doing it. It's, I'm in awe and I'm so grateful to know you. And I'm so thankful that people like you are out there, you know, picking it up and doing it. So Anna, thank you so much for all that you do. Thank you for being here, and thank you for BDI.
Thank you.
And thank you for being on the show and for sharing all of this with us. And we will have all of your contact information posted in the show notes. I encourage everybody that listened today to check out your amazing website and all of the things that you're doing, and know that you can connect with Anna and her organization. There are things that she can do for families all across the country. Check it out. And I'm really looking forward to checking in with you again to see how things are growing, because in 6 years, this organization has just exploded. So fabulous. I'm so glad we got connected, and I will definitely be staying in touch. And I actually have a family I'm going to send you. So
awesome.
Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I just wanted to take a second to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to listen to these podcasts. I'm having a blast doing them, and I hope that you're finding the content to be what you were really hoping. If you are, please take a second to leave a rating and a review. It's so helpful in getting this content out to people who really need to hear it. Thank you so much.